Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, poet Kevin Dublin talks about love and his upcoming performance at Sights and Sounds After Dark. Then we hear about what's coming up at the Black Choreographers Festival and a Valentine's Day block party in the Mission. It's going to be so much fun. Today's theme is about love and community. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, right here on KLW 91.7 FM. During the end of Bad Bunny's Super Bowl halftime show, a message flashed on the stadium Jumbotron that said the only thing more powerful than hate is love. I don't know about you, but I feel like a lot of folks need some love right now. I know I always could need some love, you know what I'm saying? But this Thursday, February 12th, I'm hosting my pre-Valentine's Day event. It's called Sights and Sounds After Dark, The Love Factor, and there will be music and poetry. And one of the wonderful artists who will be performing is San Francisco poet Kevin Dublin. He's also an educator and producer of Living Room SF, and Kevin is the author of How to Fall in Love in San Diego. And Kevin is joining me. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey. Okay, so Kevin, first of all, y'all go to Kevin's website and read his bio. It's deep. I could do a whole show on just Kevin's bio and how he analyzes Ryan. I was like, I wasn't ready for this. So Kevin, you grew up in Smithfield, North Carolina.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Your parents were hardworking people. They did not have a high school education, but they taught you a beautiful skill that I love about the South. Storytelling. It's nothing like when you back going down to the South and you hear those good stories. How did they influence you?
Ooh, like so much. Whether you know, thinking about being super young, and I was obsessed with Fraggle Rock. I love Fraggle Rock. Like, it made me, I was like, oh, I want to learn how to play the bass guitar to play that opening riff of the bass line. I mean, bass line. But that's all I learned, so it didn't really. And my mom would, I love watching that. So she would, have this quilt. She would, like, put it over my head and be like, oh, go on to Fraggle Rock and tell me stories and have me make up stories. And, so whether it's that or my dad who just turned, I mean, he was... all kinds of stories. Just like, he could turn anything into a joke, make anybody laugh. Everybody in town knew him. Like, so, I mean, stories are just ingrained in everything.
Oh, I was not expecting Fraggle Rock. I was not expecting that. That means y'all had HBO.
Oh, well, yeah. I think for a brief period, you know how you had those periods where you have cable and you didn't have cable?
Yeah, that sounds like, ooh, y'all had cable, because I was like, the only time I got to see Fraggle Rock is if I was at somebody's house. All right, I see how you guys are living in North Carolina. And you guys, I know we're laughing because Kevin and I know each other. So that's why when we get together, we're always like, before we even say hi, we just start cracking up. It doesn't even have to be about anything. So Kevin, okay, so in your bio, you said that you didn't know any writers growing up. So how did you become a writer and know you could be a writer? Because so many people, sometimes they say they didn't know they could write until they saw someone. And then they're like, I want to be like so-and-so, or I want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, it's like, I knew writing wasn't like a full-time thing. It was something that was like, I had like a cousin who wrote poetry, was older and in the church. And so she was always like, she would, kind of put me on the things. It wasn't like, a profession, but it would give opportunities to be like, yeah, you like to do this kind of thing. Why don't you write an Easter play, like, for church? Like, write a, and I was like, oh, write it, and it was a thing, and, put it on. So it was just, it still was just people, basically given the opportunities to do it.
Yeah.
Like, to write, even if it wasn't something that I was necessarily an initial look at. I was like, I'm going to be... And I wanted to be Dwayne Wayne. Like, I was like, I wanted glasses. Like, I want, like...
Dwayne Wade from a different world.
Right. Yeah.
For people who don't know, played by Kadeem Hardison.
Right. Wayne Cleo Swain. But but it was like, that was the thing I loved. I just loved doing it so much. And eventually it's got to the point where I think, yeah, it was, I mean, I did some, you know, slam in high school, and I mean, we were always just like kind of freestyling and rapping and stuff. But it was in college where I was a, you know, I was a creative writing and English major, and it was a thing where I was just like, no, like the professor was like, yo, no, you like this. It was like, this is the thing, like you said, like there is a way to be able to do this sustainably forever. And so, yeah.
And it's funny you mentioned Dwayne Wayne, that character, and in A Different World, he was an engineer. And you know, that was one of the few instances where you saw like a cool black nerd, right? Was like was Dwayne Wayne. Even though like in the beginning he kind of started off dorky, and then as he grew up, as he matured, the character, you're like, oh, okay, this is a cool black nerd. Yeah, that was such an inspirational character to a lot of, I know a lot of black men and a lot of black youth, including myself. And North Carolina, such a the South to me is so sometimes mysterious and layered and yeah, it is, it is. It's and it can be magical, and there's so much history in the South. What did you learn about love living in the South?
In the South, I mean, I love that, I learned that love is infinite and comes in many different varieties, you know, before even having any name for it. And I learned that it's complicated, you know. You can absolutely love you know, a place because of the people. You can love a place because, you know, of the environment. You can love a place even for, you know, its history, even when there's like all of these things that are a part of it, which, you know, it's like, oh, this survival that is there is there because of all of these, you know, thinking of my dad, you know, or my full family, like literally, you know, my family growing up in Jim, you know, Jim Crow South, and leaving, being like, nah, Newark, this is the you know, the place to be, and then coming back. And how for generations before that, like generations, always back to that same land, there being this tether. I just learned like 4, maybe 5 years ago that where I went to one of the places where I went to church growing up is like on the plantation land where my ancestors were. Like I just like it's just like I had no idea growing up.
And then you talked about your parents. They had migrated to New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey, and then came back to, did they come back? They came back to Smithfield.
Yeah, came back to
They came back.
Smithfield.
They came back to Smithfield. It's funny, Kevin, because we're talking about love. And a few months ago, I posted on social media. I said, I'm at an age now where I need a man that know how to grow and cook turnip greens.
Hey, well, sounds to me like you gotta get you got either it gotta be imported from the South or
I was like, I need somebody. You gotta know. I'm turnip greens age.
that turnip green love. Oh, that's a
Turnip.
problem.
Oh, you know I'm working on it. I'm already
You're
working
right.
on it. Y'all might hear it. Y'all
It's
might
like,
hear it
let's
at the event.
retire.
So what have you learned about love living in the Bay Area?
I mean, how to truly fall in love. I mean, that so this is a spoiler for how to fall in love in San Diego. So, you know, wrote How to Fall in Love in San Diego is called Fall How to Fall in Love in San Diego. There's all these poems in San Diego, but the collection ends in the Bay. It ends in San Francisco, and it lands with a poem, How to Fall in Love in San Francisco. So that's where, you know, met my I mean my now wife. It's like, so had all of these ideas of what love was and what it meant to me and what I thought it was going to be. And at one point, like, nah, this is not the thing I'm trying to do. but then ultimately, in the Bay, there's an abundance. There's just such an abundance of love and love. It's like you have, if love is a light and you have it, shining through different spaces and different, objects, like the Bay is, like a prism, and it refracts it like in all the colors. So that's what I love about the Bay.
If you're just tuning in, I'm chatting with poet Kevin Dublin. He'll be performing at our event, Sights and Sounds After Dark, The Love Factory. Excuse me, The Love Factor. And there'll be other great artists on the lineup, including musician Cadence Miles, along with writers Cassandra Dallet and Norma Smith. And that's happening at our KLW downtown venue at 220 Montgomery Street tomorrow night, Thursday, February 12th. And the show starts at 7 p.m. We have about 4.5 minutes left, Kevin. Can you read us a piece?
Ooh, I can do that. So I have a so would you like a piece that is actually by me, or a piece that just a love poem that I love?
A piece by you.
Oh, okay.
Of course, Kevin, that's why we got you on
I
the
know, but
show.
I just love so many kinds of poems and poems. We have 4 minutes. Then maybe what I'll do is I will read two, and one is really, really, really. They're both pretty
Okay,
short.
come on, Kevin. Time to
This
kick it.
first one: dating you would be a full-time job, a little security, and substandard benefits.
Ooh.
Yet sometimes we end up in situations that involve genitals, usually lasting the quiet blue hour before dew catches light. You chatter cheeky promises post-coitus to piss me off, like you'll always come first to keep me awake. So I admire your back, smooth like taupe face of a child dozing with an open mouth against window pane. You sleep rhyme words that don't rhyme, voice twists come inside to sound like trust me. Infatuation lets you believe there's just waiting. Like the dark of sleep, what we need will happen, only heavier. Dreams teach carousels are the best place for open mouth release. Zebra smiles full of teeth lit by glowworm moon. But tonight, instead of reading about black murder, I get in a hot tub to settle into the newlywed phase. Your eyes open, closing, closed, whole lunar cycle at once before our kisses. Birch branches in the wind, celestial upon earth, leaves leaving to become heap of shadow at night. Mosquito tangles between my beard and bites itself to death. Splash of Cabernet from chin stains blanket under snow moon. Highway whoosh and crickets make mellow between promises, glistening as a stone in the distance. I could die tonight. And it wouldn't matter whether I'd been murdered by some function of the American system. A different kind of ecstasy. Wasp landing on the neck, but showing mercy. Love like a Zen Buddhist student running to his master to tell him about a crow's caw heard from a boat. Your lips, my lips, your thighs, my hand, the simple agony of being unable to reach your soul.
That was whoo. Okay, if y'all trying to reproduce, definitely in one of your cabins. Come to the Sights and Sounds After Dark if you need some inspiration. We're all laughing because we were like, everybody was quiet and still, and all you saw is just steam rising from all the Kevin, Kevin is bringing it. Kevin is a great poet. We're gonna have all different types of poetry. I'm fanning myself because that was beautiful. And I'm like, you know, Kyle's like, you know, we this 4 p.m. so we gotta keep it.
Oh.
You know, it's 4 p.m. That's 4 p.m. So,
anatomical.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, anatomical. Unmute yourself, Kevin. You're muted. But yes. Well, you know, I think we just go in.
Come on the set. Come at 7 p.m.
Y'all, this is a sample of what to expect. Like I said, we had Norma Smith on. And she's going to be talking about family stuff. So, like I said, we're doing all types of love. So, Kevin, go keep us excited and stimulated in a way like of our minds and imaginations. And it's going to be a great with the music, too. And Cassandra Dowler, who's also performing, Kate Smiles, it's going to be a great event. Kevin, always a pleasure.
Incredible. Thank you. Thank you, Jen.
Always a pleasure. And I'm gonna get your book after you read that. All right. You can hear more of poet Kevin Dublin tomorrow night in downtown San Francisco for Sights and Sounds After Dark. And that's at KALW spot at 220 Montgomery Street. The show starts at 7 p.m. The doors open at 6 p.m. And come whether you have a Valentine or not, we just want to have fun, be in community. Kevin's book is How to Fall in Love in San Diego. And I lived in San Diego. I did not fall in love like that. But I'm getting that book, which you can get on bookshop.org. And coming up, we're going to do a kickball change to the next segment. The Black Choreographers Festival is almost here. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darden, right here on KALW. Now, one of my favorite things to do is dance. I am no pro, but I like watching the pros on stage, which brings me to the 21st Annual Black Choreographers Festival. And you can see works by established and emerging artists. More than half of the 18 choreographers participating in the festival are debuting new productions. And the festival runs February 21st to March 1st at the Dance Mission Theater in San Francisco. And joining me are Laura Elaine Ellis, co-director of the Black Choreographers Festival, and choreographer Dazon Solin. Welcome.
Hi, Janae. So happy to be here.
I'm so happy you guys are here too. Hey, Dazon.
Hi. Thank you for having us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you and just what you're doing. This is so important. You know, our show is all about the arts. And so I'm happy that we could cover this. So you both, of course, are dancers, have a dance background. Laura, let's start with you. How did you get into dancing? And briefly.
I will be brief. It's a brief but fabulous story. At 6 years old, I knew I wanted to dance. Mm-hmm. At 8 years old, I knew I wanted to be an educator. I've been doing both of the things I love most in the world my entire life. And it was really nurtured. Talk about love. It was really nurtured through my family. I had grandparents that had a performing arts school. Nice. I studied through them. And there was an amazing woman named Arwanda Lewis in the Los Angeles area. And I grew up through the Arwanda Lewis African American Dance Company.
Where was that? I used to live in LA. Where was that at?
So it was on Adams.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Adams between Redondo and La Cienega.
Okay. I used to live not too far from there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went to Cienega Elementary School, and we could just walk right to Arwanda Lewis. Lula Washington would take it over some years later.
And I used to work for Lula Washington.
Yeah, before going over to the Pico facility. Lula was in the building that Arwanda had. So, and Arwanda, really quickly, it was the Arwanda Lewis African American Dance Company, part of the Catherine Dunham legacy, because she was in the founding company of Catherine Dunham.
Okay.
Was the only all African American West Coast company through the 70s and the early 80s, before Dimensions Dance Theater here in the Bay Area. But there was Ailey in the East and Arwanda Lewis, first to be on PBS from the West Coast, really powerful. So I'm sort of a Dunham legacy, Arwanda Lewis.
Nice.
And then I would come to the Bay Area and find a home with Dimensions Dance Theater and Deborah Vaughn. Yeah, and then I just want to say Dr. Halifa Samari is another person and mentor of mine who had one of the first Bay Area and nationally focused Black Choreographers Festival here in the Bay Area called Black Choreographers Moving to the 21st Century.
Nice. Wonderful.
This festival stands on the shoulders of that festival.
Thank you for giving us so much of that historical context. Yeah, that history. No, and like you mentioned some names that I knew from when I lived in LA.
Yeah.
Dazon, what about you? What led you into dancing?
Yeah, I grew up in Brooklyn and my dad was a DJ. I guess he still is a DJ. My dad is a DJ in Brooklyn. So ever since I was a kid, I was in clubs like dancing.
He would take you to clubs?
Yeah, him and my mom. They'll take me to the Soca Club on their hip. So I grew up dancing in the clubs as a kid. And it was mostly a hobby up until college.
Yeah.
And then I had a long talk with my grandmother when I was in college. And she convinced me to try some dance classes at that level. I was majoring in business. And I slowly transitioned to double majoring in dance and business. And then I decided I'm going to go full throttle and dance. So then that's how my life became the life of an artist.
Nice. And then Brooklyn has such the energy there when it comes to dance and like the street parties and like just how the music, like just the music and art are just out in the street. Brooklyn is such a special place. South LA, which you mentioned Laura too as well. Mm-hmm. Definitely special places.
The clubs, Leimert Park, you know.
Leimert Park. Yeah. And we do have some SoCal listeners. So shout out to folks in LA and Southern California. So, you know, I understand the festival is a safe space for Black choreographers to experiment with their creativity. And I always tell artists, there's nothing like when you have that freedom to just really just stretch your wings out and be creative. Dazon, how does the festival do that, you feel, since you're one of the Black choreographers featured? How does it support you to really just take chances?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it actually supported me in that way since I started in the festival. I think that was maybe like 2014, 2015. Mm-hmm. I started in the artist mentor program, which I was paired with Joanna Highgood at Zaco Dance. And she was my mentor and she pushed me to make a solo that was out of my comfort zone. And ever since then, I was able to go back to the festival and always try something different. The staff, the tech team, Laura, everyone is so open to artists showing up as how they are.
Yes.
So it frees me up to go into the room and be like, hey, I want to try this thing. And everyone's like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And then recently I got a master's in architecture. So my work is starting to include like set design and installations. And the first place that I tested out my work in relationship to installations was at the Black Choreographers Festival. And through Laura, I had an opportunity with some other artists, Jordan Dabney, Claire Fisher, Aldrin Ford. We took over MOAD for a day and did like this full installation and dance performance.
Cool.
It keeps expanding. It keeps expanding.
Laura, you know, you're one of the co-directors of this festival. What kind of space did you want to establish for these artists, for these choreographers?
Right. I co-present and I'm co-founder with my arts partner, Kendra Kimball Barnes, as baby choreographers. When we were debuting, we felt pretty siloed. We did not have a network of folks to bounce ideas off of. We did not always have safe spaces to create. We often felt like we had to get that thing right or we weren't going to be invited back into the room. And so I wanted to make sure through our New Voices, New Works programming, through our artist mentoring programming, that Black artists know that they have a network. So one of the wonderful things about Black Choreographers Festival is folks get to find their people. They get to come together and know that their ideas are valued. And as artists, they're fully seen and visible. And they get to make work that may hit and become a fan favorite, or maybe that thing doesn't hit totally, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes they're works in progress, sometimes they're full premieres, but they always, as Dazon said, they get to show up fully as themselves. And just briefly, like we have live music, as Dazon said, with original score with Jordan Dabney, both weekends, Jordan is actually composing live music. Our first weekend, we are opening the space up outside next to Dance Mission Theater.
Oh.
Gabriel Christian is honoring the late Jess Curtis with the reimagining of a piece called, I think it's Ice Car Cage, and he's doing the ice section, a 300-pound, 10-foot-tall, 4-foot-wide block of ice that he's doing a structured improvisation around and destroying this block of ice. All kind of metaphor and things within that piece. This is someone who last year did a piece that was totally in the dark. So just an example Whoa. Of an artist that says, I think I want to do this thing. I don't know if you're going to say yes to that. And we're like, oh, yeah, we're saying yes to that. Bring that on. Like, we haven't seen that yet. Let's do that. And we're figuring out how to make that work best for nice. Gabriel. Isha really wants audience to connect. She wants folks to feel the love of community and participation. So we're connecting her piece with chairs. Folks get to have this intimate experience of being on the stage, and then we're connecting the chairs on the stage to the house. So we're doing these setups that are really unique and different.
Nice.
So yeah, so when you say what I want the space to be, I want the space to be something that people authentically feel supported when they walk in, to do that idea that maybe they wouldn't have an opportunity to do in its entirety, or even as a work in progress when they come to BCF.
Wow. Oh, that sounds
And
so
we
exciting.
Want to invite the community to come and experience.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I was thinking. I was like, that's an experience for the audience too as well.
We call it the BCF experience. Like audience say that when they show up, they leave transformed, inspired. It's uplifting. The performances are so unique. Every single person, like, we are not a monolith. Basically, Janae is what I'm saying. And the BCF proves that Black folks, we are not a monolith.
Oh, no.
And we span the different dance styles and all the different ideas. There are pieces that speak to ritual, that speak to personal journeys, that speak to bringing community together. Really, there's something for everyone. Mm-hmm. And then there are those things that you wouldn't see anywhere else but at BCF. It's super unique. And we're 21 years of doing this, right?
Right, yeah. No, that I'm saying. And you all have been around a long time. And Laura, is your middle name Elaney?
Just Elaine.
Elaine, okay. I can. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Named after my mom's best friend.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. If you're just tuning in, I'm chatting with Laura Elaine Ellis and Dazon Solon. Laura is a co-presenter of the Black Choreographers Festival, and Dazon is a featured choreographer in the festival. The Black Choreographers Festival takes place February 21st to March 1st at the Dance Mission Theater in San Francisco. Tickets are on sale. Get them now because these shows sell out. So the theme is here and now. Why is that?
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to sing the Luther song, but I'm not because I can't sing. But that's what the first thing that came to mind.
So in my not as brief as you probably wanted it bio, I mentioned Dr. Hupu Asomari, the festival whose shoulders we stand on. The title of that festival was Black Choreographers Moving Towards the 21st Century.
Right.
That festival took place between 1989 and 1995. So in 2002, my arts partner Kendra and I, we knew we wanted to bring back a festival in some form. We got permission, really blessings from Dr. Hulifu, like, go ahead, girl, take the baton, do the thing. So we decided we would call it Here and Now because we were in the 21st century when we premiered the very first year of the festival in 2005. So it's Black Choreographers Festival Here and Now. And it seems to just really capture, again, the way we want to always be relevant and resonating to audiences, but also, you know, relevant to what's happening. So honoring our cultural roots and definitely pushing the art form forward.
Nice.
And you know, the Sankofa thing, like, what is here connects to what's come before and looks towards the future.
Yes.
So the here and now has both the past and present happening, as well as the future.
Dazon, I wanted to ask you, why are Black choreographers important?
Oh, that's a question. Why are we important? Why wouldn't we be important? Wow. I'm gonna sit with that for 5 seconds.
Okay, you know it's live radio days on.
Yup, yup. Three, two, one. Okay, yeah. We are important because we tell stories that need to be heard. We're important because we see, we feel, we experience things that are here from our ancestors. We have stories within our blood that wants to be told. We have stories within our cells that are screaming to just like come out. So we get the opportunity, we get these spaces to be in community together, to make space for these stories to come forward, and then to honor the ancestors that haven't been heard yet. So that's why we are important. And we create magic, constant magic. Our work is spectacular, even when we don't hit the mark, because it's full of so much passion, so much love, so much truth. So yeah, that's why.
And Laura, why is dance important to Black people? Or important for Black people?
Well, it certainly is part of our cultural roots. Movement, rhythm, it's actually inherent, and it's part of our blood memory. And the way you can express and do that storytelling, you don't have to have words. You can connect beyond what words can say. It has movement and dance has a way of just getting deep into the soul of the person who is expressing. And it's powerful when someone witnessing that story has an opportunity to enter, right, that realm.
And it is a realm, yeah.
And it is a realm. Yeah. And for sure, again, we call it the BCF experience. People come to it thinking they're just going to be entertained, and certainly that's probably happening, but they're also being transformed. One of my favorite comments was from an elder who said for the first time, and I always get a little teary, he said for the first time he felt validated. He was in his 70s and he had never seen himself on stage before.
Wow.
In the stories that were being told by these young artists. And the artists were probably 2 or 3 decades younger than this elder. But he said for the first time, this was 2 years ago in 2024, for the first time, he felt validated.
Wow. And we need to, we actually need to end, we need to end right
sure.
there.
Yes.
But what a beautiful story. And thank you all
And I just want to say too, we feed folks too. I have to do the Black, we are a Black festival. So we feed folks, we feed you, we have a cake and chat. It's just a great time. It's such an experience. So we hope folks come out.
All right. So you all buy a ticket, get a plate. And,
that's right.
And see something beautiful. Laura and Dazon, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And do they know to go to bcfhereandnow.com?
Yep, and we'll have a link on our website so they can get all that information. Laura Elaine Ellis is the co-director of the Black Choreographers Festival, and Dazon Solon is one of the featured choreographers. The festival runs February 21st to March 1st at the Dance Mission Theater in San Francisco. Get your tickets now. We'll have links on our website. Get them now because they sell out quickly. Next up, we're going to salsa down Lover's Lane in the Mission on Valentine's Day because it's gonna be a party. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darden, right here on KALW 91.7 FM. Earlier, we talked about the power of love during these turbulent times, and one source where some people find love is in community, like at the block party Lover's Lane, which is on Balmy Alley in the San Francisco Mission. Now, this Valentine's Day, Lover's Lane will celebrate love and bring people together through family activities, food, live music, local vendors, and artists. This is the festival's 5th year, and joining me right here in studio is Nina Parks, the marketing director of Lover's Lane.
Hi, thank you, Janae, for having us.
Yeah,
really appreciate it.
When I heard about this, and I missed the first 4 years, but when I heard about it, I was like, wait a minute, this is perfect time. We got to get y'all on. So tell us, how did Lover's Lane come to be? This sounds like just a great idea.
Man, it has been a labor of love of community. Yeah. So the very first Lover's Lane was actually one of the founders, Lucia, and her partner, Fredo. They just opened up their garage in Balmy Alley like during the pandemic, and they invited some of the artists that they're friends with to just kind of pop up a table, because again, it's like we were in isolation.
Yeah.
People are inside creating, right. But also there was like a need for like a commerce and connection and just to, you know, be with each other. And in the lane, at least in Balmy Alley, there was an ability to be spaced out and like people are outside. And the next year after that, it kind of took on more life of its own. They had started to bring out their friends that were DJs. And again, it's still kind of like pandemic-y, you know, a little bit weird. We don't know, like, people have been in isolation. And so, like, to be able to hear music together, to be able to, like, go to a food vendor and, like, grab food and, like, all this other stuff, it was, like, such a necessary way to, like get back into our bodies, get back into creative hustle and, you know, just connect with each other. So it's grown so much this year. It's not going to just be in the alley. We're actually going to be on Harrison. We have over 200 vendors.
Oh, wow. It's really grown.
It's grown. Yeah. So it's going to be from 24th in Harrison to 26th in Harrison. Balmy Alley, we're going to have live painters. So the alley's still going to be activated, but not with the vendors.
All the vendors. And that alley has a lot of murals.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So many murals. So much storytelling.
And Lucia is a
muralist.
Is a muralist. Okay. Yeah, shout out to her. Yes.
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 And then also, like, our kids area is going to be on 25th Street.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. So you all just grew from, like, having this small gathering just so people get out the house during the pandemic until now, like, this really, really big festival. You know, and again, this festival celebrates love for the community, and it's a Black party, which is Black parties. That's just a special thing. I love Black parties. Talk about how love is an act of resistance and the importance of community during this time. Some people, you know, they're talking about joy and love as an act of resistance.
Right. So, you know, growing up in San Francisco, I grew up in San Francisco, went to public school in San Francisco too. Shout out to all the teachers that are on strike right now. Like, we love you and we support you. And that's like part of the love as resistance, right? People aren't fighting because they hate something. People are fighting because there is a deep love for humanity. Mm. There's a deep love for connection. There's a deep love to see each other be able to manifest and create themselves and to be able to support environments in which all people can be able to do so, right? Yeah. Even though Lover's Lane, you know, is very deeply rooted in, like, Chicano culture of the Mission District, it actually, like, houses the ability for, like, folks from the Bayview are coming out that are creators and, you know, and, like, folks that grew up in, like, Diamond Heights and people that grew up, you know, like, all over the city to come and perform and showcase their talents and to be able to be seen and heard. And that's, like, a big part of love as resistance, right? Love as resistance of not being seen, right? So, like, we want to be able to, like, see each other and to be able to, like, uplift that we are here.
Yeah. I love what you said as far as, like, people advocating for themselves because, or just, you know, doing advocacy, not because they hate something, because they love humanity, they love people, they love each other.
Oh, deeply.
Yeah, that's a whole different way of looking at things. Okay, 200 vendors. That's just vendors.
Yes.
And there's family, you know, activities. Kids can get their face painted, you know, bouncy houses, health and wellness stuff. It's a lot going on.
Oh, there's a lot going on. You can get a chiropractic adjustment.
You can get your back. Get your back.
Correct.
Get that back worked on.
After we talk about After Dark.
Right. See, that's Kevin Dublin's fault. Kevin Dublin. Okay, we got to stay on the air.
Sorry.
So we got to assist ourselves.
My bad.
Tariq. Tariq. Who works up more is looking at us like, Janae, behave. But look, how long does it take? I can't believe you said that. How long does it take?
Let me bring it in.
Okay, Nina, you can't come back because Nina, you get me in trouble. But look, but how long does it take to plan all of this?
It is an entire year. So like really we'll give ourselves a break for like maybe 2 weeks after this and then we pick everything back up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
So a whole year and you give 2 weeks yourself just a 2-week break.
Pretty much.
And this is free.
It is free.
It is free.
It is free. So that's why it takes all year, because we have like teams of people.
Yeah.
Shout out to Natalie in Georgia, who, you know, like really helped to lead folks in, you know, filling out like grant applications. Mm-hmm. And shout out to Homie for being our fiscal sponsor. And then we have like other teams of people that are, you know, like Layla, Chef Layla, who helps to bring together the food vendors and make sure that's all permitted. So it's like things that take, you know, a lot of a lot of time and thought. So it's all year.
I love the mission. When I was growing up, I didn't really go to the mission. And I grew up in East Oakland. So this is funny. I grew up in East Oakland. I would hear like, don't go to the mission because the mission's rough. And I grew up in East Oakland.
That's
I love
wild.
East Oakland. And I can say that because I'm from East Oakland.
Word.
But so I can say that. And so then, and I know it's changed too. I know it's been gentrified. But when I moved back to the Bay Area and I started going to the mission, and I just, and I grew up near the Fruitvale district too. So it reminded me of that. But it's still just a different energy. And that's why I was like, to have something like this is just beautiful. So who are some of the performers? Because you guys are going to have some live music.
We're going to have some live music for sure. We have Mike Evans, who's a comedian.
Okay.
That's going to be hosting.
Oh, nice.
We also have Sin Fronteras, MC Abdul, Andre Cruz, and there and like a bunch more. We have I think over like 15 DJs too. So Ray Velez, who's been leading things up with Frisco Gang, Tony Montana and the DJ Project out of Horizons.
Okay.
So we have like, you know, we have the young folks, we have the OGs all represented.
Yes.
So it's again, it is something that you have to experience.
Yeah. I love seeing the OGs and the mission and the lowriders.
Oh, the lowriders are going to be out too.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, this sounds like it's going to be so much fun. And I'm just thinking too, just like the live music. I'm seeing like dancing in the street. You know, yeah. All of that kind of
stuff. Our stage is going to be on 25th and Harrison this time.
Okay.
So it's going to be a larger stage, which we're really excited about. And then I think there's like maybe like three DJs that are going to be like throughout the block. And then also on 24th, we have a bunch of DJs. And then in the alley, we have DJs. So no matter where you go, there's going to be music. There's going to be a vibe. You can dance anywhere.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Nina Parks, the marketing director of Lover's Lane. The Valentine's Day block party is this Saturday at Balmy Alley in the San Francisco Mission. Now, we talked about, you know, Chicano culture, and there's so much diversity, you know, within the Latino, Latinx culture. We saw Bad Bunny celebrate his Puerto Rican heritage at the Super Bowl, and shout out other cultures in the Latino diaspora. Any significance for you with this event happening on the heel of that performance? Because people are still talking about Bad Bunny, and like just to see, like I said, I know that's, you know, Puerto Rican, that's a different culture, but just to see that on that field, and the sugarcane fields, and the workers, and the taco stands, and you know, it was just.
It was a beautiful production. Yeah. It was a very beautiful production. Also, just for everybody, me, Nina Parks, I'm Filipino and Jewish. I'm not Latino, even though I look Latino. I kick it with hella Latino folks.
Okay.
So, like, so that's another thing.
You had me fooled. But
no, exactly.
Yeah.
No, I'm already know it.
Okay.
So,
but we can still talk about it.
No, we can totally.
Though.
Yeah. No, and I think something to also remind people of that representation is not liberation. So, you know, like it is good that we have representation. It is dope that, you know, just like Kendrick also being able to highlight and again, like uplift, communities that are less visible.
Yeah.
There's still like a lot of work. It's a win in the sense that awareness was like, was created.
Yeah.
Right. And like conversation was started.
Right.
You know, and like, there's so much more to that.
There
it's like, it's
so
not where
more.
It starts. Like, it's where it starts, not where it ends.
Yeah.
You know,
and because I know sometimes people think, oh, I watched this.
Yeah.
You know, and I did something. And
right. Yeah. Word. You know, and then you look at it and you're like, for me personally, again, this is personal. This is not the views of Lover's Lane.
Yeah.
Is that also like, I haven't really watched football since the Kaepernick.
Yeah, and it's a lot of people too. And a lot of people have like,
since they played him like that, I'm like, nah. And like for me as a creator, like videographer and everything, like I've done three Niner fan videos where like music videos that have like over like 200,000 views on YouTube, right?
Okay.
So it's not like I didn't spend a lot of the time in that fanfare or anything, but again, like when you have institutions that don't actually do the work, right? Because you have the NBA and Steve Kerr, where, you know, he actually shows up for when things happen. You have the NFL that silences and fines players for speaking up on
or taking a knee. You know, we saw the backlash from him taking a knee. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's kind of like, you know, again, it's like the NFL as an institution actually has like a long history of like quelling like the voices of people that want to take a stand.
Yeah.
But it's cool that, you know, again, like you can see that there are representation. There is representation. There is also like the storytelling, like you said, around like the sugarcane fields and like all of that. Because even for Filipinos,
right.
We had sugarcane fields also in like in the Philippines, and that was like a colonial, you know, like the Portuguese and also mm-hmm. the Spanish colonizers that came out there also like extracted from the islands in a similar way. So like Puerto Ricans, Filipinos, we have some cousin.
Right, absolutely. absolutely. And then, you know, I know a lot of Black folks were excited to just see the Afro, you know, Latino like representation too.
Totally.
You know, during that show. And a lot of people related to that, just related to our ancestors.
Yes.
You know, working in the fields.
Straight
and just
up.
Seeing, you know, the representations of family and those kind of things.
Oh, yeah. So. And I think that's something that's so phenomenal about Lover's Lane is like, that is who we are naturally.
Yeah.
Like in any day. But like on Lover's, like at Lover's Lane, we get to celebrate it even more than on any other day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So really, really excited that people have some momentum of wanting to continue to party from last weekend, hoping that people stay hydrated and then come back.
You know? It shouldn't be too warm.
No, I mean, we're hoping that it doesn't rain either.
Yeah.
So
I don't think it is. I haven't checked. I don't.
It's a small chance. So we're gonna just, you know, pray the rain away.
We're gonna just hope the clouds just take a break.
The sun comes out.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, I know for some people Valentine's Day can be hard if they're single.
Right.
You know, they don't have a Valentine. Some people maybe grieving, you know, a lover, whether it was a breakup or maybe, you know, they're, you know, a widower or whatever.
Straight up.
And so what I like about this event, it's not just the focus on like, you know, romantic love, right. But like this is the focus on like community love.
Yeah.
And you could bring the grandkids and you know, all that good kind of stuff.
Yeah, the whole family.
Yeah.
It's like something for everybody. So multi-generational, again, mm-hmm. not having to focus on love as just like a, you know, this is love as a spectrum.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like across boards, right?
Yeah.
Not just romantic love, but also like the love that you have for your homegirls, the love that you have for your, you know, your brothers and sisters, the whole nine, you know? So like come out and celebrate all of that.
And then the thing is too, is like, it's free, it's accessible, and like, you know, San Francisco and free.
It's
like,
rare.
You're right. Yeah. You got to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
You know. You've been a part. How long have you been working again with Lover's Lane?
So this is my fourth year with them, but we've been friends for quite some time.
So mm-hmm. this is your fourth year. What have you learned about love from the community in the mission?
Oh, what have I learned from love from the community mission?
Yeah.
That love is fierce.
Mm.
That love fights for what it believes in. It creates what is not there.
Yeah.
You know, and it has the ability to create safe space for imagination so that we can actually dream up new worlds. And I think that's very special about what the mission has to offer, with all the storytelling that is on the walls. It like really literally like somebody imagined that and like put it on a wall.
Yeah.
So like even just that alone is like the possibilities are endless.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. there is a magic to the mission too as well.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, there definitely is. And what about, you know, what have you learned about love? Because I know you're, you know, you do all different, you know, types of community service and mm-hmm. activism. What have you learned about love doing the work that you do?
Oh, so also during Lover's Lane, I do tarot card readings. So I will be in Balmy Alley doing tarot card readings.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, I have like people that come religiously to get those readings. Right?
Okay.
And what have I learned about love there is that, it is like love is also like the journey to love is tender, you know, and it's like we don't give ourselves enough grace to allow ourselves to like develop in it. And I think that's something that people are learning more and more because like I get to see these like interesting patterns of story that comes to sit in front of me. And I think right now people are really like reshaping what love means.
I think so too. I'm seeing that too. Yeah.
Which is like, it's been really inspiring. And also like, I know it's so hard for so many people. Like, it is a hard shed of like what they thought that love might have meant because they had like a storybook fairy tale kind of misconception, but then realizing that love is, you know, like love takes so many different shapes and so many different twists and turns. So like, you know, again, it's like being very open to the journey of love.
Yeah, life will teach you. Nina Parks
will teach you.
Nina Parks, you have been too much fun.
I hope you come in and hang out with us.
I'm gonna have to come through. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Really appreciate you. Thank you for having us.
I've been speaking with Nina Parks, Marketing Director of Lover's Lane, and she also does tarot card readings, and that'll be at the Lover's Lane Festival this Saturday, February 14th in Balmy Alley and other areas in the Mission, in San Francisco's Mission, and it is free. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rango. Thank you to our Director of Audio Programming, David Boyer. Thank you to our board operator, Tarek. I always forget Tarek's last name, but jump in. Oh, I can't hear you, Tarek, but that's okay. We know it's you. And thank you for tuning in. I'm a horrible host. And make sure to RSVP for my event, Sights and Sounds After Dark, featuring musician Cadence Miles, along with poets Cassandra Dowlett, Kevin Dublin, and Norma Smith. That's tomorrow night, Thursday, February 12th, 7 p.m. in downtown San Francisco at 220 Montgomery Street. RSVP at klw.org/events. And come whether you have a Valentine or not. Remember that secret Lunel, the comedian, told me about something she had planned in Oakland? Well, she'll be performing at the Black Comedy Competition on Valentine's Day. Tickets are on sale now. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday. I'm rushing because I'm running out of time. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other. Love you. Bye-bye.